If you've had enough, or had near enough, sick and tired of that old man looking down on us, come together, as we think we got a plan. Save a teeny tiny traveling folk band.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Flat Nickel Podcast. I am your host, Hannah Now, recording this intro from a Rite Aid parking lot. Always the last minute intros. And today's episode is really awesome. We did a follow-up episode with Scott and Mallory from The Rough and Tumble, two really good friends of the show and also just good friends of mine. They came and stayed with us for, I think, 5 days, played a show, played the local farmer's market. On Monday, we had a really big vegan, gluten-free dinner party with Elizabeth and Eric from Pocket Vinyl, and really just had a good week spending time with people that I enjoy spending time with. You know, they're good friends of the podcast, and they're also just good friends, and they've been so supportive of the show and so supportive of just everything we're doing in general, and I really appreciate it. This episode we recorded, I'm so not used to the lingo yet, guys. We recorded right before they left for their second tour, or their next tour spot after Shippensburg. And, just talked about a lot of fun stuff, including their previous projects that they had been in, what it's like being on the road, trying to stay healthy on the road. Unfortunately, Mallory's been dealing with, some health issues, so she was trying to get those sorted out, and she gave her tips for staying healthy on the road. And also, just if you are someone that's going to be a full-time touring musician, they gave some advice for how to make your space feel a little bit more like home. And it was great, and I got to see inside of their camper for the first time. That was really cool. And of course, I got lots of puppy love from the biggest, cutest, floppiest dog around, Puddle. And so I enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed recording this episode. I enjoyed the week leading up to this episode, spending time with them. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. Yeah. Do you guys actually have Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you use it?
Scott does.
I post our shows on there, which I don't know if that's the way you're supposed to use Twitter, like, to its fullest degree.
Capacity. Mm-hmm. That's like, the one social medium I just don't bother with.
That's how I am, too. I just don't care about Twitter.
Yeah.
You know what? We do care about Twitter. We do tweet. Whenever we have bad customer service.
That's true.
That's when we take to Twitter.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Joking?
No, seriously. Like, serious. Like, we've had some trouble with our bank, and so we've been
tweeted
like, if this is the customer service that you get,
yeah,
you know.
And they'll follow up right away. Verizon always follows up right away.
A lot of, like, air companies. I don't know why I said that.
Airlines?
Airlines, yes.
Yeah, the air companies.
Yes.
I feel like air companies can be like anything, and mm-hmm. It could get into some weird territory. I feel like airlines respond really quickly to that sort of thing, too. Mm-hmm. But airlines are just like, people are watching airlines now.
Yeah.
Everything's, that's not going so well for that industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
You should, we're gonna kick out all the hobbyist,
hobbyist pilot. Although I feel like if you're a hobbyist pilot, you're eventually going to kick out yourself.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's
it is one of the most expensive hobbies.
Yeah,
is to be a pilot. Because despite never being in a plane, I wanted to get my pilot's license for a while, and I was really determined.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents are like, "You realize that you've never even been in an
in
airplane.
A plane." I feel like that's
crazy.
Just step one.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Flying somewhere?
Yeah, step one.
Yeah.
For sure.
I've never done that.
I read this book by Annie Dillard where she talks about crop dusters and how everybody who consistently rides a crop duster plane knows that eventually one day they will crash to their death. And it's just this like total understanding that like this is the risk that I take.
There is a book I'm named after an aviator, and I was supposed to be named after Beryl Markham, who was a bush pilot.
Okay.
Which is a very similar thing of like you're not landing you're just landing in a field. Mm-hmm. Surprise. And like the thought, the terror that instills in me of the idea of flying a plane and landing it somewhere where it's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Scares me.
I think pilot is definitely a viable option then for you for a career.
Guys, we're retiring the podcast. I'm going to be a private pilot. That's what we're going to do is I'm going to take you guys on tour in a plane.
Yeah. Oh, no, we don't do that.
Are you a fan of flying, Cuddle?
No, we're not. None of us. We decided, I think in our second year as a band, like whenever...
I think it was earlier than that.
So very early on in our band, we decided that we no longer can ride on motorcycles, private jets, small planes.
Or helicopters.
Okay. Yeah. So please explain.
Because too many celebrities die uh-huh. in those situations.
Okay. Yeah. What about like
we also don't do drugs.
Sports cars... I don't know if we've ever been in a situation where
in opportunities for like helicopters and private planes and
no.
We don't carry white lighters with us though.
Oh,
white
that's
lighters?
True.
White yeah. lighters, yeah.
Like the actual color of the mm-hmm. why?
Because who was it? It was
the 27 Club.
Yeah, I think the 27 Club. Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix.
They all carried white.
They all had
no,
white
we
lighters.
No, found with found white on lighters their, on them. On
all right, so that's a thing that I'm never doing now. That's terrifying. That's unnerving. You know what's interesting is we were talking last night about your like. You all moved to North Carolina and had like a little artist compound type mm-hmm, thing. Mm-hmm. And as much of a dream as that is, mm-hmm. like that sounds horrifying to me.
Really?
Because I've spent so many, like you guys would be fine. I wouldn't mind, you know.
A commune in that situation.
Right? That sounds fun.
You know,
but I know too many unreliable musicians.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we
suddenly
did
there would just be small fires like, happening all
I think,
over.
I think we're doing musician wrong because there have been several people who have told us it would be super easy for you guys to move in and we wouldn't care. Like, we've had a lot of people across the country who just think that, like, us moving onto their property would not be problematic in any way.
That's really funny because last night when we were talking and we were talking about my parents' farm, mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, you should just like
live there,
live in the barn.
Happily.
Like, just residency at the barn.
Like,
yeah. I think that means that we're bad musicians.
Yeah. It might be.
Right?
Uh-huh. It might be that because I don't know. Maybe it's just the difference between like folk musicians and
rock and rollers. I'm a former rock and roller. Maybe I'm rehabilitated.
A recovering
rock and
roller.
Did you, like, start small fires when you were a rock and roller?
No, but when I was a kid, I did. I was obsessed with fire as a kid.
Okay.
Like, I used to set my bedroom carpet on fire. Like, I would experiment with different, like, nail polishes and which ones would burn faster and nail polish remover. And, like, I had all these, like, mini experiments, like, in my trash can. It was a metal trash can. And I would just like, and then I started doing this thing where I would see how big the fire could get while I could still put it out again mm-hmm. without setting off the smoke detector. Mm-hmm.
How many times did you set off the smoke detector?
Only 5 or 6 times.
Hey, Mallory.
Yeah.
How do you feel about small animals and what's your relationship like with your mother? Somebody literally just talked to me. Someone was talking to me about these like kids that she knew that ended up in prison or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And it was they started out just setting small fires.
Yeah.
And then the crimes got bigger.
No,
and
I'm
bigger.
Sure I'm on the track to being like a sociopath if I didn't work so hard not to. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you look at the difference between me and my sister. Actually, like my sister is legitimately, I think, a sociopath. And so like, and there are these times where I'm like confronted with a decision. And I say, no, this is what my sister would do. I need to do the opposite of that thing so that I don't end up in prison or hurting someone. It's a very conscious effort to not be a sociopath, I think. Okay. I've actually met other musician friends who, like, they have these these really specific urges, like to push somebody down the steps. Have you ever had that urge? Okay. Yes. Well, no, you have, right? Yeah, yeah, you're walking behind somebody and there's just something inside of you that's like, I'm going to push this person. You don't do it.
I felt that way about, like, driving my car off the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like driving into somebody. Yeah. Or like, there's just this weird thing in your brain that's like, I could go off the rails.
I could do this. Mm-hmm. I could do, like, I could snap. I could do this.
I could do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think a lot of people have that.
I think almost everyone does. Normal. I think the difference is the people who like dwell on it and potentially do it, and the people who are like, I should not do that. That's drawing. Yeah. Yeah, that's pushing a line.
Well, and also the people who maybe can't control whether or not they do that. Like, right. Like that is just the way that they act, and they it's not a choice for them.
Yeah.
This has suddenly turned into a psychology podcast.
I know, I know.
Sorry, we've been thinking a lot about this recently.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I don't set small fires anymore. Now that we live in a camper full time.
Yeah.
We avoid fires except when we're at campgrounds and there's a safe fire pit. Yeah, like fire pit. Yeah.
Are we good with bonfires? Yeah. What do you feel about large fires?
Large fires I can deal with unless we're out west, like in California. Yeah, yeah.
That's fair.
Overall, I enjoy fire for its practical use and occasional recreational use. And that's about it. Yeah. We don't even smoke cigarettes anymore, so we don't even enjoy it for the excitement. Yeah,
like lung cancer.
The lung cancer. The lung cancer. We don't even enjoy it for the lung cancer anymore.
Yeah. Do you feel like you see a lot of musicians who are very much just in tune and around their vices all the time? Because that's been, and this is like, again, I think kind of the folk and the rock and roll thing is like, I'm predominantly in rock and roll now.
Mm-hmm.
And when I start, the people that I work with now for the most part are sober. Like, but when I started, like, there was a lot. And I obviously didn't partake. I'm a small child. But, like, there was a lot of drugs. There was a lot of alcohol. There was a lot of the whole, like, booze and women and smoking cigarettes. And, like, and also, do you think, like, now that we're in this era of, I feel like people are being held more accountable for their actions that are a result of those vices, like, it feels like it's gone away.
I don't know that it's gone away.
Not gone away,
but I know what you're saying.
To a lesser extent,
then. Or at least it's not glorified as much, maybe.
Yeah.
Or
I think that's true. Mm-hmm. I think it's I think people are seeing. Well, I mean, I think actually people are realizing that it's really unsafe, and so like, I mean,
and that it's destructive outside of yourself, like. You can't just blow off steam because you're in your 20s sort of thing. It's like, oh, you blow off steam in your 20s and you end up with lung cancer in your 40s. Or you end up with a criminal charge against you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Rightly so.
Yeah.
That's not great for a band.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's just something that, like, I always think about is I feel like I've seen less of, and I know it's there.
Right.
But the booze and sex and drugs in folk and Americana than in
And I think glorifying it less, like, we personally don't smoke pot or anything, but we know a lot of friends who do, and the more normal that's becoming, the less, like, edgy and, like, crazy, like, you crazy musicians who smoke pot to get inspired sort of thing is more like, no, like, that's just something that some people, do.
Right. Well, you know, and I think the same could be said for drinking. Like, you know, I would say it's a rare show that we play where, you know, with the exception of, like, coffee shops or something, where, like, there aren't people drinking, you know, to some degree. But, like, it is not a... it's not a destructive thing. Right. It's a, like, it's a social. Public and social
It's actually,
thing.
And, yeah.
And, I think the more that, like, stuff gets normalized, maybe it's harder to...
It's easier to detect when it's an actual problem.
Right.
In yourself as well.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in those situations and people are drinking casually and you're the one pounding back, like, 4 glasses of wine before you're set, then you go, oh, maybe this is a problem. Like, maybe it's just more easily detectable. Yeah. I don't know, though. I still think there is, like, this glorified, like, this glorification of like not being healthy, like these people that we idolize that are older, like oh, what's his name, he can hardly stand up and sing because of how smashed he got his whole life, and I just look at that and I go, that super sucks for him.
What always bothers me is particularly in music that is radio play and popular for people in their like teens and 20s, there is that glorified mindset. And it's not even just like the alcohol and the drugs, it's the, you know, well, I'm cool because I'm depressed.
And that's interesting.
That really bugs me as somebody that suffers from severe mental illness. This like, well, let's tell young people that like it isn't a problem, it just makes me edgy. Like, no.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not leaving your house for 3 months because you can't get out of bed, that's not edgy and cool. That's sad.
Yeah.
That sucks. But that's like the theme, like a recurring theme that I've noticed in popular music, that like I can't support those artists. Like, I won't listen to it. I won't support them because I can't imagine, particularly like when I was really sick and I was also really like susceptible to outside influence, particularly in popular culture, that if somebody were telling me like, no, it's cool that you're like this,
then which is different than like trying to write your way out of it, because you can listen to people.
It's not like, this is my human experience and this is what I'm struggling with. It's cool that, like, I'm depressed and I get messed up and I do drugs and I sleep with people that I don't know and end up putting myself in really risky situations and I drive while under the influence.
And let's dance.
Exactly. Like, it's that sort of thing that, like, it's been, like, really frustrating for me. It's something that I've noticed within, like, the past couple of years becoming more and more prevalent. And then you see people who are stating that they have these really horrible diseases as this measurement of like, well, I'm cool and I'm edgy because I have this. And it's very frustrating as somebody that suffers with that every single day. And is like, sometimes I feel like I want to drive my car off the side of the road and just be out of it. And then suddenly this is somebody that somebody's glorifying on the radio. And it's like, this doesn't feel healthy. And it's like the new thing of, we used to popularize the whole drinking and, like, even in country music, the whole, like, have a beer and forget the girl type thing.
That
used to be really prevalent, and it still is, but this is, like, the new version of that.
Yeah, and it seems to be targeting not the 30-something, 40-something, but the teen and the 20.
Right, where it is more influential, and you are more porous to this information and this influence.
Well, and I think that's a, I think that's a statement. I want to be careful, but I think it's a statement of privilege too. Like, I'm a young white 20 something and I can afford to be super messed up and do nothing about it because I have this safety net of money.
Not going to affect me. And that's also with these artists that are coming up, and it's like, okay, well, I have access to a lot more stuff than I did prior and I can get away with a lot more. This music is going to be reaching people who don't have that luxury. And who, okay, maybe it seems cool that you're going to go and get high at a party and you're just going to go home and it's not going to matter. But there are people who are going to go off the rails and ruin their lives because of that. And that influence, to me, I feel like as artists, you have, you do have such influence over this wide variety of people who you're reaching through your sound. And I'm not saying that that should always be positive, that sad songs aren't important, that documenting the human experience isn't important. But to make it seem like, well, this is like a cool thing to
glorification.
Is dangerous.
It's the difference between like top 40 pop, that the kind of thing you're talking about, and Julian Baker. Have you listened to Julian Baker? Her new record is very, very closely documenting her recovery, like from drug addiction and depression and these really serious, serious problems. But as I listen to it, it is not something that I go, cool, that sounds so fun. But it's like literally her, like, I just have to make my appointments that's all I have to do. I just need to make my appointment so that I can get better and I don't feel better and I'm scared. And I'm, I think it's just a matter of how genuine you are with your experience, or how genuine you're able to be with your experience and able to communicate it. I remember in my early 20s writing a lot about how messed up I was, and I felt genuinely messed up. I don't remember writing a dance anthem around that.
I mean, you wrote a really good rock and roll song called Ode to a Cigarette.
I did.
Or 10 Minutes, I think it ended up being called. But like...
But it was not... Yeah, but it wasn't this like glorification. Mm-hmm. It was a, I guess I'm stuck.
Yeah.
Like I'm actually stuck in this experience.
Yeah. And there's nothing... I don't think there's anything wrong with writing those sorts of songs, because it is your experience. But there's like... I think with age definitely comes perspective, and we're really big fans of Rainbows. Kesha's record.
Love it.
It's really great, and it's her going through this process of like. Of
I used to write these party songs. I used to write all these things that glorified this.
This is the reality.
Yeah. And now she's kind of like reclaiming those sorts of songs and doing it in a really healthy way.
And it was super cathartic. Like we must have listened to that record like dozens of times. Like dozens. Yeah. Like it was our go-to record for most of last year, and it was super cathartic. I mean, especially with like stories of sexual abuse coming out and stories that, like, because that was her story, you know, is her story that she was coming out and claiming. And it was a super relatable record. And it fell just on that line of, but this is also a dance anthem. But it felt so genuine.
Yeah.
Like almost like a powerful dance anthem.
Yes. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
It's empowering.
Yeah.
Is the music from your previous separate projects still floating around?
Oh yeah,
it is. It's on Spotify.
I do want to look into Mallory being a rock star.
So I went as Mallory Graham and her invisible friends is what I went. It was a super fun project too, because I took everybody in the band and I made them
invisible.
I made them write a story or tell me about who their invisible friend was when they were younger, and then I went to my friend Alice Stearns and I gave her that story that they gave me, and she would draw a sketch of their description of their invisible friends, hence making their invisible friends visible. And it was super fun. It lasted maybe a year, and then I was like, I can't get these guys together. Like, I couldn't keep that together. There wasn't, like, I was the only one, like, truly motivated for the project, and it's hard to, like, constantly be getting people excited about your own stuff if, you know, and Scott was actually the lead guitarist in that, and I'm not saying he wasn't excited, but it was still hard to keep everybody motivated because we were in our early 20s and everybody wanted to go to birthday parties instead of playing shows, and everybody wanted to go and do fun things with and not like put in this effort. Mm-hmm. I think I just had a tremendous amount of commitment that nobody else really had.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's a common plague for bands as far as...
Like there's one person that's really into it? I'm sure.
Yeah. I imagine it is. Like...
Yeah. And I was the sole writer, too. So, like, I think when people don't share in that writing process, I guess you shared a little bit in that, and Mike did, too. But I was the one that was pushing for it so hard that, like...
Yeah, they were all your songs.
They were all my songs. It wasn't like a... And I think when you don't share that, it makes it even more difficult to get people excited because they don't have any stock. Right. You know, they don't have any creative stock either, so...
I do have, like, actual questions.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've kind of just been chatting, which is the problem with sitting down with people that I know. Like, it's like, yeah, let's just talk. And it's pretty much, pretty much this podcast came about from nights like last night.
Yeah, cool.
Was we would have musicians over, we would have a bunch of everybody together, and we would have dinner, and we would talk, and then suddenly it's like, oh, well, this is like this wealth of information that even with you guys and Eric and Elizabeth passing between like, oh, have you played this venue?
Right.
I would recommend, you know, not going here, or use this website and talk to these people, and I was like, oh, this is really helpful. Like, this is something that, like, if we could do this on a bigger scale, then maybe that'll be helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I, since this is technically our follow-up episode
with
you guys, this is your second time on the podcast. I'm sure there will probably be
Hope we get a badge.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, or robes, actually.
We should do, like, a little thing where when people have their second episode, like, they get a little...
Little like
pin,
yeah. I want a
I
pin.
Survived the Flat Nickel podcast.
That'd be so fun.
But essentially, I wanted to talk a little bit about you guys living on the road, kind of your expectations for that, and maybe other people's expectations for that who might be about to take the plunge. And also your recipes.
Oh boy. Yeah, that's fair.
I am still determined at some point when I get my life a little bit more together and I'm no longer a crazy person, to do something under the Flat Nickel umbrella where I go and I have bands submit their favorite recipes and I make them.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Yeah.
Because I like doing these like larger interactive projects with all of these people.
Can you do that on Smell-O-Vision? So they can, people can
really... I heard that there are some people who are working on that.
Cool.
That's going to be the next big thing. Just that's the next corner. Big trend.
Yeah.
So I guess essentially... These are in no particular order because my brain doesn't work in a particular order. When you guys, like, decided to live on the road, what were the things that you knew you were just going to get rid of? What were the things that, like, you knew that you wanted to take with you? Like, what little things for, like, even just sentimental reasons? Like, I know you have little knickknacks. Were any of those knickknacks there from the beginning, or are those things that you've sort of just accumulated?
You know, a lot of them were there from the beginning. We we have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles trash can that
I've had since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Is that what you started fires in?
No, it was actually my brother's trash can, and then I took it for college, and then I just never gave it back.
But we have artwork in there that...
We have your buffalo painting that I got you for your birthday.
Your little monsters...
Oh, yeah, these little monster pictures that are, they're little monsters that are caught in mason jars. And it was, like, the first art that I had purchased when I first moved to Nashville. And they just meant so much to me because I had gone out by myself to buy them. And I don't know, there was just, like, such a, like, it was, like, a weirdly liberating thing, but they're actually these monsters that are trapped in mason jars, you know? And so it's, like, this... It's a conflicting thing. We have a painting in there that we found at a thrift store from early on in our relationship. It was when we had a very tumultuous beginning of our relationship. Not between us, but as the situation was. We had a very tumultuous beginning. And we bought this painting of a cabin. It's like this oil, I think. It's an oil painting on wood. And it's a house. And we called it our Ohio house. And we used to, I'm just going to say stuff.
Yeah.
We used to tell the other person, like, when things were strange and weird and scary, we would tell the other person to meet me at the Ohio house in our dreams. And so we would meet at the Ohio house, like, when we were sleeping. And then we would be safe there for a while before we would, you know, wake up and have to face the day again. So we found this painting in a thrift store, and it looked just like we had imagined the Ohio house to be. So we bought it for like $2, and it's been hanging up. So
that's
in the camper. So it's like our safe place.
Yeah.
I need to do some things with my face so I don't start crying. You made me cry too many times.
I know. It's time for us to leave ship
and spirit. Mallory just says stuff, and I'm like, well, this is the only hope I have. Like, this is... As you guys have been here for so long, and I've been watching you guys interact, I'm like, okay, like, there's a chance that I'm not going to be alone forever.
Like, you're going to find somebody as weird as you are.
Yeah. This is, it is possible.
This is hopeful.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm
gonna, yeah.
Yep.
The stuff that, like, you were leaving behind, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. obviously, there was, like, furniture.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A ton of furniture.
Like,
yeah.
What did you guys do with
that stuff?
Was it, were you doing the thing where, like, okay, well, let's just, like, leave this at someone's house and then we'll deal with it later?
Yeah, actually. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, some of it we did. Some of it we just put out on the curb and got it picked up.
Oh,
some
we had a huge yard sale.
Yeah, we had a huge yard sale. Yeah. We sold almost everything. Scott had bought me a rocking chair for my birthday from a thrift store, because I'd always wanted a rocking chair. Yeah. And so I couldn't part with that, although it would have been hilarious to put it on top of the camper like Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, it really would have.
We did consider that for a second. Mm-hmm. But we put that at a friend's house, and she still has it for us.
A bunch of our, like, the instruments that we couldn't take with us but didn't want to get rid of. Mm. We, like,
distributed
lent to our friends who have studios.
So that they can still be used.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the thing, is, like, what we didn't want is to, like, get rid of our stuff or put it in people's houses and expect them to store it and not use it.
Right.
Because I think that's more heartbreaking to just, like, have it sit in storage. Mm-hmm. Like, we would have just gotten a storage unit if we wanted it to be perfectly preserved for when we got back. Yeah. But, like, we gave it out knowing that, like, it's going to get used and potentially broken, but that's what it's meant for. And it, you know, and it meant so much to us that we would love to see it used until we get it back, if we get it back.
Yeah.
What's the association with Ohio? Because you don't you have two songs?
Yeah. Okay.
Ohio, and yeah. You just mentioned what's mm-hmm. the.
So.
You went to school in Ohio.
I went to school in Ohio.
Yeah, we have mm-hmm. some good friends in Ohio. We travel to Ohio a lot.
Our early tours, we spent a lot of time in Ohio.
Yeah, but the songs Ohio Number 1 and Ohio Number 2 are were written for a soundtrack that kind of took place in Ohio, and so it was written from this woman's perspective. She had she was coming back from Desert Storm to her family in
home in Ohio.
In Ohio. So. You know, that's kind of the story, and
it was specific to her.
But Ohio's special to us.
It is, and I think because we travel the whole country, Ohio being like called the actual being called the heartland of America, while everybody has mixed feelings about, you know, that part of the country politically and mm-hmm. socially, it's always kind of been a very central place for us, and so. Especially now at a time when everything, like, everywhere is our home, like, the mm-hmm. whole country is our home, it's nice to, like, feel like there's some sort of central beating heart to where we are. And while, like, we don't have a house in Ohio, I don't know if we plan to have a house in Ohio, it's just this, it's just something that feels comforting or something to say, our Ohio house.
Yeah.
It just feels like there are no, like, major predators there, you know? Like, there's no, like, rattlesnakes and stuff like that. So it's, like, it just feels kind of safe, I guess.
Yeah.
Just snow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of snow.
How large is the camper? Is the camper that you have now the camper that you've always
mm-hmm.
had?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How, what,
16 feet.
Okay. Is that something that, like, that's a comfortable size for you guys?
Would a little squishy.
You consider
yeah.
going bigger?
No.
No.
Well, no. You know, we've considered it. It would be nice. We only have a single axle, which is really scary when you blow a tire or mm-hmm. a wheel bearing, because, you know, then you're kind of screwed. You can't even limp to the next stop.
You're just stuck.
You're just stuck. So yeah, we might move up that way. There are definitely more solid campers than the one that we have. Ours. I forget if we mentioned this on the other episode, but our camper is basically a cardboard box with wheels on it.
Yeah,
and it's like duct taped together, and
like with these tiny staples.
Yeah, it is not well built, and so I think if we were to upgrade, it wouldn't necessarily be because we need more space. We just need something sturdier.
Yeah.
And
but first we need to reliable. Pay it off.
But first we need to pay it off. So
were you caulking when I pulled in?
No. I was putting the caulk in. I need to caulk the camper.
Yeah.
But
because he was just holding, I'm like, I know what that is.
Yeah. I bought. I went.
We're always caulking if you know what I mean.
Yeah. but that's on our list of things to do this week.
Yeah. Kind of top of the list, but we put it at the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm assuming the listeners don't have the answer to this question. Have you always traveled with a dog?
Yes. Yeah. Our first dog, Butter, I had since before we were a band, and it was a non-negotiable, both touring and in our relationship, that I would always have a dog. Mm-hmm. And luckily, Scott also loves dogs.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. Butter was a fantastic dog. And and Mud Puddle is a real joy to be around. Yeah. So,
as she's currently snoozing, which is what she was doing the last time we recorded.
Yeah. She's great at podcasts.
So, like, the best podcast guest ever. Is as far as like the special, not precautions that you have to take on the road, but just sort of consideration as far as here's this giant doggo that I'm required to be responsible for, and I'm traveling across the country and playing shows.
Yeah.
Like, what sort of things?
Like, additional things do we have to think of?
Yeah, like, what's sort of different other than buying very large bags of dog food.
Yeah. Probably getting crappier hotel rooms.
Yeah. Like we...
Yeah, do you guys struggle to find hotel rooms that...
Like Motel 6s.
Motel 6s will take us.
Kind of our standard.
La Quinta's take us.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, part of the reason that we got the camper was so that Butter would have a place to be when she couldn't go into the venue. You know, it just...
Like, why we chose a camper instead of a van.
Right.
Like, so that she would be more comfortable and it would be safer as far as, like, heat and cold goes.
You know, and this goes for, you know, for our own personal health and, like, and all that. But, like, finding time for Pud's yearly checkup is something that, like, we have to consciously think about. Like, we can't just, you know, September rolls around and if we're not in Tennessee, it's not like, you know, we can just go to our normal vet, you know, like we're not going back to Tennessee for a few months. And so we had to, her checkup is this coming Friday. And so
coming Saturday.
And,
we got it together.
Yeah, and so we need to, you know, we had to find a vet on the road so that she could get her rabies vaccine and
Also, like, that's something that I feel like, particularly for people in your situation where you don't necessarily have a lot of people that we talk to that are touring musicians, even like Eric and Elizabeth, they have a home base. Like, there's... But as far as, like, for you guys having to worry about if you need a doctor's office or if you need to get a checkup or, like, what do you do with that?
We figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, I just had a doctor's appointment this morning for, like, my annual wellness visit, which I haven't done in 4 years. But, it, you know, like, we don't go to the doctor very often. Mm-hmm. We don't have health insurance. We didn't, we qualified for Obamacare when that was still a thing, but the state of Tennessee blocked it. So we were not able to get any health care. I haven't had health care since I graduated from college.
Are 11 years ago. Are you still technically both residents of Tennessee?
Technically we both are, yeah. And so we just carry our tax records with us and go to clinics whenever we absolutely need to. We spend a lot of time on the internet looking for homeopathic remedies. We have a lot of friends who we will call in certain situations and say, like, hey, what are some home remedies like that you know about? Like, we, like, pay attention when people say they're sick with certain things, so we know who to call whenever we get sick with those certain things.
Yeah, and we go to the doctor vicariously through a bunch of different friends.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And like 2 weeks ago, I was in the ER for the first time in 2 years for what we now found was kidney stones. So it's like, but a lot of times we'll go to a clinic trying to like find cheaper health care. And they'll say, well, because you don't have insurance, your only option is to go to the ER. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of a ridiculous, it's like healthcare is such a ridiculous thing for everybody right now. But we feel like it's especially,
it's just
silly.
Yeah, it's so silly. Like, especially for us. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, it, I mean.
Like, how do we find, we don't have a regular doctor, but we've never had a regular doctor, you know? So, so piecemealing our healthcare together is kind of the norm. Just it was what it was, what we did in Tennessee too. Like whatever we could get.
Yeah.
So.
What are some of the homeopathic remedies that you've found?
Yeah. We actually have some friends who are mailing, some essential oils specific to some of my needs to your house if they ever show up. And we have some other friends who, are, well versed in meditation and yoga and things like that. And I do yoga every morning just to kind of like ward off not just like physical ailments, but like also my own depression. It's been like wildly helpful in evening me out. So that, cause I'm really susceptible to pretty serious depression and I can't afford, nor do I want to be on medication just because it's never done a lot of good for me or it's has had some really, really negative effects. And so, we try and eat healthy.
Yeah, I make kimchi and kombucha every
yeah in the camper.
You know, this was like, one of the questions.
Yeah,
like gut what health sort and... of stuff do you make that you? Because I when I was in the camper a couple days ago, waiting to go to lunch.
Yeah.
You're just like, yeah. Don't forget, we need to like make some more kombucha, and I'm just sitting here like.
Where do you put the kombucha?
We have my little brother sells SCOBYs, and so he sent us
starter
kit. Yeah, like a starter kit. He does that online, and so he sent us one, and it's been really fun. Like I think I've just made two batches, or we've made.
We're
two
on
batches.
Our third batch now.
Yeah.
So we do that. Scott started making kimchi.
Yeah, kimchi's really easy to make.
We have a recipe on our website, roughandtumble.com. Check out the blog. You can get a kimchi recipe.
Yeah, we've, you know, for the last 2 years, maybe, we've been doing the Rumbly Tummy, which...
is an online blog. It's a blog on our website where the first Wednesday of every month, we post a recipe that we've been making. Mm-hmm. It's actually... where we are right now on October 2nd, we'll be releasing a new recipe tomorrow.
Yeah, for dilly beans.
For dilly beans.
Like quick pickled dilly beans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
yeah,
we make a lot of stuff in the camper.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, part of it's like, I don't know, it's just fun to like experiment with making these sometimes elaborate recipes or, you know, concoctions in
with one burner
in our little camper but I mean it's also just it's to keep us healthy and keep us active and it's fun
you know?
Cooking food is really fun
so. We love cooking.
Is there anything that you've done to make the camper feel more homey?
Yeah, we painted it first thing. As soon as we got that thing, I picked up paint colors and we spent the first night until like 2 a.m painting it. I remember the first time we took it in to get repaired, they had to look at the inside and the woman came out and she's like, nobody ever paints these things. This is so weird. And I was like, yeah, but it's not this like dark brown, like.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a depressing hotel room.
Yeah. Like the walls are white and there's like yellow stripes throughout it. And we have an accent wall that's yellow, which I realize now is an anxiety color, but it doesn't make me feel anxious. So yellow is my favorite color though, too. Yellow and brown. So
how far out normally do you guys book?
We currently, as of October 2018, we have something tentatively booked for December 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So there are just these random dates that that will only book like a year and a half in advance. And so they're usually pretty, you know, like good shows, we will we'll book that far in advance.
Also because we don't have any plan of stopping at this point. You know what I mean? Like we are so mobile that it's fine for us to book 2 years in advance. That's not really plausible for a lot of other bands or normal people. But for us, it's like, well, that's job security. We're not planning on stopping by 2020. So sure. Yeah, we'll book in Florida in 2019.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we're booked that, you know, and we'll go through and figure out where we're going to play in the meantime. But we kind of have these broad strokes touring.
Yeah. Our big goal right now, people are often asking us, or we've been asked a ton lately, like in the last 2 weeks. I feel like we've been asked several times, what is your goal? And we like always have these like blank stares as soon as people ask us, because I don't know if we know what our goal is. But short term, kind of long term, we want to be in Alaska by summer of 2020, because it's just something that we've wanted to do. And while we're still out here doing what we're doing, we may as well take advantage of like the luxury of being mobile. So we're going to be in Alaska by 2020. We're saying this on a recorded podcast so that it's so like it can be real. Yeah. Yeah.
How, as far as the shows that you book, how, like what percentage is returning venues versus new places?
That is a good question.
I mean, it doesn't have to be exact numbers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not actually sure. I know that.
Some of our best shows or some of the better shows will not book us consecutively, like year after year. So some of them we have to wait sometimes 3-4 years before we can return to. Yeah.
I'd say like 25-30% might be returning shows like in a year.
But as far as how many venues we want to return to or will have us back within their time frame, most of them have said yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like most of them say, yeah, we want to have you back. We don't book consecutive years, but we want to have you back, which is very reassuring.
Yeah.
Unless they're all liars.
We do a lot of community events. We do. we do a lot of like community oriented shows. We do a lot of house shows. We do a lot of like small listening rooms. And so there, you know, there is kind of a longevity to those places a lot of the time, because they're not, they don't have this high overhead of like, you know, needing to also be a bar, needing to also, you know, be a music venue. Like these are just things that people do because they love music. And so I don't know, but with that comes like, you can't just call them up every 4 months and say, hey, book us again. They, you know, you kind of need to give some space to that. So.
As far as finding new venues, like what do you, and we talked a little bit about this last night, but what do you use as far as resources for finding new places?
Yeah. Other bands that we respect and love, usually. We'll look at their tour dates.
Who are you tour stalking?
Oh, who are we not tour
stalking? That's kind of true.
We have our Google calendar is just filled with Steel.
So-and-so's dates. Steel this person's dates. Like, it is actually, that is what our Google calendar is right now. It's just, like, names of bands that we love, who we've either met personally or online or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now we're stalking them.
Yeah, so I think that's one way to go about doing it. Another way is, I know Eric from Pocket Vinyl mentioned Indie on the Move, which
we don't use that anymore
because they're subscription based. And we didn't feel like paying.
There's also the incredibly hard way of looking at the list of venues that they provide and then going and finding the contact information yourself, which is what I used
which
to
is
do.
What right, we which do. Is what we yeah. do, yeah.
But yeah, no, Indie on the Move is something that I feel like comes up relatively
frequently.
We book through Concerts in Your Home, which is another, you do pay an annual fee for that, but.
It's the only one we pay into, I think.
Yeah. And then there's this website called Undiscovered Music that we also got some dates from.
Yeah.
But anymore, we're just kind of looking at other mm-hmm. bands who are in similar positions. And
yeah, you know, and a lot of times, like, we'll contact those bands and say, hey, like, did you enjoy the show? Like, is this a good fit for us? Right. Like, we don't just say, take all their dates. Mm-hmm. But, like, we try and spend a lot of time being very intentional about, especially the kind of, like, the nicer venues or the more, like, exclusive venues. Like, I don't want to cold call someone who we obviously aren't a good fit for, mm-hmm. you know? Like, if they're only booking white dudes from Texas, we're not going to be a good fit, you know? But if they're booking more diverse mm-hmm. groups, then we probably are going to be a good fit.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other...
It's a little pointed, wasn't it?
like resources or anything that, I guess, for people who are doing the larger scale tours, for people to look into?
Yeah, I mean, specifically if you're a band in a camper... freecampsites.net is really important. Even if you're a band in a van, like, that's been good for us. There's some RV dump station websites that we use on a regular
basis. Somebody just recommended Allstays to me the other night. We used to use Via RV, but it stopped working on my phone for the last few months, so mm-hmm. we don't use it anymore. But somebody just the other night here at the Thought Lot asked if we used Allstays.
Oh, cool.
And she strongly recommended it, so... I think we'll probably do that.
As far as anything coming up, this is going to come out, I think, next week.
Oh, cool.
You know what's fun is Sam has started, as he's edited these episodes, has picked up on things that I say pretty much every time mm-hmm. I record something. And we've created a list, and one of them is, I think this is coming out in 2 weeks. But I think this is coming out October 10th. So anything as far as where you're going to be, what part of the country you'll be in.
We'll be in the Northeast, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll be in New England. We'll be in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And New York.
Yeah. We have a big show coming up November 2nd in Brownfield, Maine at the Stone Mountain Arts Center. We have another big show at Haverhill, New Hampshire on November 3rd at Court Street Arts.
Yeah.
But we have tons of shows in between now and then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're playing Club Passim
in November.
November.
Yeah,
mid-November.
And where can people find your full list of tour dates?
Oh, at www.theroughandtumble.com or... on our Facebook page.
Instagram, you guys post about Instagram.
Oh, yeah. We Insta every week on the horizon.
We're also on Songkick. That's how we list all of our venues. And I know that people can subscribe to, like, be notified whenever bands you love are in your area. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Yay.
That's it, huh?
Yeah. We're at 50 minutes.
Awesome. Party.
All right, that does it for another episode of the Flat Knuckle Podcast. A couple of things you can do to help us out. Please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Subscribe to us wherever you might be listening, be it iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, and share the podcast with a friend. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Flat Knuckle Podcast, and be sure to tune in next Wednesday at 11 a.m. for a brand new episode.